Hey everybody, this is John Forslund. You're listening to On the Board Sports.
You can put it on the board! Yes!
And welcome back to another edition of the On the Board Sports Podcast. I am your host, William Trucci, a.k.a. Will C, coming to you from Long Island, New York. I have two very special guests with me today. I'll introduce one guest. He is a part of the Mustache Classic. I am emceeing this event. It is a really awesome time. Last year, we had a great time. They played hockey, and they raised money for great awareness and great causes. I'm talking with the one and only Matty Caputo. Matt, thank you again for sacrificing some time. How's it going for you today? And looking forward to this new episode coming out.
Well, thanks for having me on. You know, you've been with me basically every step of the way the last really, you know, these last 2 years of putting this together. So it's always been very stressful. It's even more stressful this year with all the restrictions and limitations we're dealing with. But with people like you doing their part and guys like Doug really coming, stepping forward and getting involved, I'm just really blessed today. And the whole Mustache Classic event and everybody involved is really better off because of you two guys. So thank the both of you. Thank you very much.
Speaking of Doug, we're talking with the one and only Doug Smith from Goon. Doug, thank you so much for sacrificing some time for us right now. How are you doing today? And you're a busy guy running around. You know, how's everything going for you, man?
Everything's fine, and I appreciate you guys having me. And, you know, like Matt said earlier, the Mustache Classic, I mean, this is a big event, and believe me, I'm honored to be involved with it. And I wish that I could bring more to the table to help you guys because it is such a great charity. And I'm looking forward to it myself.
Can't wait for November 21st to roll around. This is going to be an awesome time for sure. Next Saturday is definitely coming, and you know, Matt, we'll start off with you on this because this is your event. This is something that you came up with. How did the Mustache Classic start up? This is the second annual charity event coming up, and especially in a tough time right now. Last year went great, obviously. For those people out there that haven't heard of this yet, talk to us, Matt, about the Mustache Classic.
Yeah, so we wanted to do an event that would benefit the Movember Foundation, where we kind of just did our best to represent, you know, to the small degree that we can, beer league hockey, and kind of create an event for the people that are involved in that. And we wanted to highlight the idea that playing hockey is a community, and it's a support system type of network, and you can make a ton of friends. And you have teammates and people that you play with that you really do have an anchor and you have the type of support system that we really want to encourage people to be part of. You know what I mean? I know that just being involved in the hockey community and dealing with the different teams and the different leagues that I've been in, we met so many people. And last year, we did like an all-star game type of a thing. And this year, under the safest conditions that we possibly can do it, we're going to be doing another little charity fundraiser type of event with a couple of more players. So it's a fun thing. We really set out. We invited guys that played minor league hockey. We invited guys that played, college hockey, and then we invited guys from New York City who just started playing hockey 3 years ago, and they love the game, they love being involved, and as you saw, we had an incredible mix of these people. We had an incredible mix of hockey lifers, people like Doug. He wasn't able to make it last year, but it was people like that that have been in the game 30 years, that have played at different levels, that have that experience. So mixed in with guys like me that, you know, the best rink I ever played in was in my backyard, you know what I mean, on roller skates. So my whole passion for hockey, we formed the Mustache Classic. So last year we were able to raise just that much below $7,000 for the whole said and done. And this year on November 14th, We've raised over $11,000. So I'm really happy what we've done. And again, it's people like, you know, you'd never believe all the companies, you know, there was some media and stuff that goes with it, but you know, we reached out to these companies and we told them we were trying to make the number one event for hockey and Movember. And right now that's where we are. If you go on the NHL Fights Cancer Challenge on Movember's website, our team, the Mustache Classic team, is number one. And just this is a testament to everybody that's got involved. I always said, I'm just the conductor, you know, and everybody else is really driving the train. You know what I mean? I'm just kind of putting things in place. People like Will, people like Doug, people like Mark Weiss from the Staten Islanders, people like Rick Ziegler from the New Haven Raiders, you know, people like Brian Stedman from Brooklyn. These guys are all leaders within the beer league community, and they may not have played in the AHL and they may not have played in the NHL, but I don't know that every guy who played in the NHL or the AHL could be a leader in beer league. Could they set up a skate that they reach out to 100 guys every weekend and count all their money and depend on people to be there? And set up some NHL and AHL guys don't want that. They don't want that responsibility. So everybody does what they can. Everybody plays their role. There's some guys that played in the AHL and the NHL that probably do beer league stuff now, and they depend on a guy who probably didn't play at a high level to be invested in it and to be invested in the network. So we wanted to reward, as you saw, we wanted to reward the people in the beer league community and the hockey community in general for just being that network, you know, of friends, you know.
Absolutely right there. And you got, Maddie, you've done a great job raising money for this awareness. You're number one right now on the Movember board. The New Jersey Devils are number two, I believe, after looking at some of the stats today. But Doug, how did you get involved with Matt? And just did Matt reach out to you as far as just going out there and trying to be a part of this over the past couple of years?
Yeah, I think, excuse me, Matt and I think we connected maybe, I don't know, a year or so back, maybe longer. I forget, but I probably through Facebook.
Yes.
You know, we're both hockey fans at heart. And, you know, I feel very blessed, so to speak. You know, what I've been given in my life coming, you know, from being a pond skater to having two books and two movies. So I feel like if I have the opportunity to give back in any type of charity, I want to be involved. And, you know, like we've said earlier, Matt's really, he's breaking his balls, doing a great thing here and working hard. And, you know, I, at one point or another, I'm sure I offered, hey, you know, if I can help out, I'd love to be involved.
He
took me in. He took me in and he let me be involved. And, you know, like I said, it's honorable for me to be involved. And so, you know, like I said, I'm really looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to meeting all the guys. And like Matt said earlier, it doesn't matter what your background is, whether you're an ankle bender or you played pro. Everyone's there for the same cause. We're all there to support the same meaning. And we want the benefit to be a success.
100%.
Absolutely right there. Absolutely right there. 100%. Doug, couldn't have said it any better right there. Doug, to focus in on you right now, where did the love for hockey begin for you? Because you grew up in Massachusetts, obviously, and the accent is coming off. It's coming off thick, and everybody has the accent. It's great. I love it. I can't wait to hear
it. He's the best, this guy.
On November 21st in person. But where did the love for hockey begin for you?
Well, you just hit the nail on the head. You said, let's be honest. So let's really be honest. I never had a real love for hockey. I had a love for the fighting aspect of the game. And listen, back in the, you know, 70s and 80s and even into the 90s, you know, fighting was really a big deal, especially in pro hockey. And I had an amateur boxing background as a kid growing up. And I had some friends that just felt if I could ever learn how to skate, keep my balance long enough, back in those days, you know, maybe you could be a fighter at some level of hockey. Now, obviously, it was a pipe dream to even make any type of league, even in my area. A beer league was a challenge for me because I didn't start skating till I was 20 years old, like ever. Wow. And I didn't play my first organized hockey game until I was 22. And I totally lucked out. I just, you know, I was athletic. I was able to pick up skating. But it was all about fighting. It was all about learning to keep my balance long enough to be able to drop the gloves and, you know, go against the other team's tough guy, protect my teammates if needed. And it just, listen, believe me, like I said, it was something that was so unrealistic that was going to happen. It just all fell into line through, I want to just say politics, but I just knew the right people in hockey where they opened doors for me. At that point, it was sink or swim. And, you know, I got the opportunity. I certainly didn't want to blow it and, you know, and lose it.
I always wanted to ask you, Doug, you know, I actually always kind of wanted to ask, did you do tough man and stuff like that with the big gloves and stuff like that? What were you doing? Like, right. What was it that like really propelled you to try it with hockey? Like, were you doing tough man or were you doing, I don't know, what were you doing right before you got on skates?
Just regular amateur boxing. You know, I fought in the Golden Gloves tournaments and stuff like that. So I was an amateur boxer. I never did tough man. I never did like bare knuckle fighting. You know, I mean, I had my share of fights in my neighborhood, so to speak, and in the Boston area, you know, street fights and all that crap like any other kid does. But I didn't really get into that aspect of fighting. I just fell right into hockey and ran with that.
That's crazy, man.
Doug, did you have any idols growing up as far as boxers go?
Sure. So I grew up in a small town called Hanover, Massachusetts, which is just south of Boston. Mm-hmm. And as a high school kid, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, the middleweight champion of the world, lived in Hanover. And I got to meet him numerous times. Yep. And I went to his gym where he trained over in Brockton, Mass., which is just the next city over. And with that gym, I went to the New England Golden Gloves tournaments and stuff like that. And so I could not help but love Hagler because he was just such a regular guy, blue collar, hard hat wearing type of guy. You know, when he trained for a fight, he was one of those guys that there was no rah-rah. He would isolate himself somewhere like down on the Cape in an old shitty shack somewhere, some hotel. And he would train for like 4, 6, 8 weeks, specifically isolating himself from the outside world so he could concentrate on what he was doing. And I love that aspect of just dig in, grind it out, and just it's. His motto was war. Every fight was a war. And he always respected his opponent, as did I. Whether it was boxing or hockey, you have to respect your opponent. You can never take anyone lightly. But I just always loved his mentality. So I tried to absorb that.
You know, Doug, it's kind of interesting that you, at that age, turned to hockey and got into the fight thing. Because kind of here in New York City, we have such a smaller hockey community than you guys have up in Boston or anywhere in New England, you know? So we do see a lot of guys that try and start playing at 20 years old, but the game has changed so much now where it's like, it's not like you could just kind of be a fighter. Like, you kind of have to develop skill really fast if you're going to be a 20-year-old that just starts playing hockey now, if you're going to play organized hockey. What did you do? Like, well, who did you work with? What was your first step? You never played. What was your first 6 months like after you said, okay, I'm going to do it? What were your first steps?
Well, you just said the right thing. The game has changed. And back when I did play in the 80s, you could be a limited skater. You could have limited ability because basically if you had the balls to drop the gloves and fight, you could just be an insurance policy on a bench. You could sit on the bench on a team in the minor leagues. You don't have to get any shifts whatsoever because you're not out there to score goals. You're not out there to actually play hockey. You're just there to fight in case someone acts up and wants to bully your team. So, you know, my mentality in the beginning was just to learn to keep my balance. I mean, yeah, I would skate up and down the ice, of course, like everyone else, and learn to try to play a little bit. But really, my whole aspect was to keep my balance in case I was able to get into a scrum with someone and drop my gloves and I wouldn't fall and look like a fool. And so it wasn't all about carrying the puck and shooting on the goalie for me. You know, it was balancing drills, you know, like a little kid would do stops and starts and go around crossovers on the circles and just stupid stuff like that. But that's what I needed. to do what I wanted to do. And the ultimate goal, of course, was to fight.
Yeah, the most basic, you were trying to get the basic edge work down, you know?
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Doug, where did you became a police officer and you had a lot of time going out and trying to box and trying to get into hockey and trying to balance the police career earlier on. Why the love for hockey going out there for you at that point in time when you had all these things going out there? Because right now you had many Americans right now that are living here just trying to balance the fight in their head right now, trying to go out there and live their dreams and trying to go out there and balance, you know, try to make a dollar here, trying to work hard. Where did that go for you?
Well, like you said, I had a dream too. And mine might have been a pipe dream. But, you know, I felt like if I could just learn enough to crack that lineup on a team somewhere, you know, I could make it. I really thought that I could make it as a fighter. And I wasn't going to be – I certainly wasn't naive to think I can make it to the NHL. But, I, again, like everyone else, I was just chasing a dream. And I just had that never say die mentality. I just wasn't going to give in.
What was that did you turn pro with the Carolina Thunderbirds? Is that
correct?
Is that what you, that was your first?
The East Coast Hockey League was my first league I made it. And I went to training camp there. I had a couple of fights. I did get cut from camp. They had a couple of guys that had played up above in the American Hockey League who were supposed tough guys. And the coach kept them because they could play also. I was definitely one-dimensional. And one reason or another, things didn't pan out. And those guys ended up either leaving the team or getting cut from the team a month or so into the season. And the coach had called me back and basically said, hey, you know, if you're still willing to do that job, I could use you. And I said, absolutely. Of course I want to do it. And they brought me in. I stayed the rest of the year. I think I played about 26 games finishing out the season, had about 180 penalty minutes, about probably 20-something fights. And our team actually won the East Coast League championship that year. So, I mean, for my rookie season, you know, I'm very grateful for what I got out of it.
Well, that must have been that must have been awesome. And like that was that was a really different league then. There was a lot of talent in there and there were less teams, I think.
Five teams. You played each other like 10 or 12 times. So believe me. Tempers were heated. Yep, tempers were heated all the time because you kept seeing the same guys all the time. You know, and if some guy was an asshole in the first game, he was definitely an asshole in the fifth and sixth game.
Oh, yeah.
So there was just, yep, and that league was really funny. You were either a 50-goal scorer with a lot of talent or you were like Doug Smith. You were there just to fight. So it was very easy for me to find fights because there were guys on every team that were trying to climb the ladder like I was.
Was Tortorella in the league at that time?
No, he had already left, but he had climbed up to the American League, I believe. But he was there just before me, yes.
Yeah, he was a hell of a player.
Oh, yeah.
Doug, why did you write Goon, and who came up to you for your book to become a movie?
Goon was basically written by myself and one of my best friends growing up in my neighborhood. His name was Adam Fratazio. And, you know, Adam was one of those guys. He was my backbone. He was the guy that first got me on skates. It was his idea. It was Adam who said, you know, let's learn how to skate with your fighting and let's see what we can go do with this and how far it can take you. So really, I mean, nothing for nothing. All credit really does have to go to Adam. But Adam had a journalistic background. He thought, you know, all these stories you keep telling me, you know, you're down in the East Coast League, and I would tell him all the time, night after night, you know, I played, I had a fight, and I would give him, you know, the skinny on everything every night. And after about a year or so, we said, we really should write a book about, you know, minor league hockey. And so he kind of put it together. It got ended up getting published. And from what I understand, a Hollywood guy who is on a writing team, you know, there's guys that just write movies, there's guys that write stuff for Hollywood. And the guy told me, he goes, you know, I was walking through the airport, and I saw the cover of your book. And for people that haven't seen the cover of my book, it's just a picture of my face with a big, big black eye. Mm-hmm. And the title of the book is Goon. And the guy from the writing team, he says, as soon as I saw the book, I knew it exactly had to do with hockey. He said, I grabbed it. I bought it. I read it on my flight. I finished the whole book by the time the plane landed. And he basically said, I called my writing team and I said, you know, we really should write a movie about hockey and forces. Hockey and forces have really been a part of the game forever. And they're a big part of the game. And I just read this guy's book about minor league hockey. Maybe we can kind of base a script of some sort off of this movie, off of this guy's book. And so that's how we got notified from the publishing company. They said, you guys are never going to believe this, but someone from Hollywood, they want to buy the rights to your book. They want to kind of make a movie based off your story. And we were like, you what? We were like, you're kidding me. So that's really how it got evolved.
It's amazing because one of my favorite elements of the movie, it's a two-part thing. One of my favorite elements of the movie is that Burrichell's character is kind of real, except they just kind of modernize him, right? Because your buddy was, he's kind of based on your buddy, right?
Correct. And they certainly, you know, for Hollywood movie purposes, I mean, they kind of tweak the character, so to speak. You know, my buddy is a regular low-key type of guy, very well-respected guy.
Yeah,
Barrichello's a big mouth on the movie, loud mouth, you know, wise guy. And just like I laugh, I mean, everyone that saw the movie, they'll say to me, Jesus Christ, Doug, you know, they made Doug Glatt out to be like this donkey, like a complete idiot. And I say to everyone, well, that's Hollywood. I mean, you know, it wasn't really the Doug Smith story.
Right.
So they got to play with the script a little bit. It's got to sell. But yeah, I mean, Adam's character certainly isn't like that in real life, nor am I like, you know, Doug Glatt was. I hope not.
I think my interesting story about this is I used to read a ton of hockey books and more obscure than you would probably think, but it was so hard to get your book on Amazon at one point. It was like, there was that period. I was looking for that book in that period where it was like $90 because there just weren't a lot around. There weren't a lot of copies.
We were stunned at how well it sold. There was a real underworld of hockey fight fans out there. And they really bought it and it sold. I mean, we were getting invoices from across the world, like other countries. And we were like, you got to be kidding me, especially Canada. I mean, Canada really sold a lot of books. And you're right. I think the market, just supply and demand, they were gouging people. You know, and I was telling people all the time, you know, they would say, where can I find your book? It's on Amazon, but they want like $140 for it. And I'd be like, do not buy it for $140 because it used to sell for $19.99.
Yeah.
Just wait or try to buy it used. But you're right. And that's just the American way, right? If you know something's good and you got something good, you're going to gouge, you're going to sell high and, you know, try to make a profit. And I get that, but I felt bad for people that actually wanted to read it.
Doug, with everything going on, as far as when the movie was produced and shot, have you had any actors come up to you during that time of filming and ask you questions like, hey, you know, how do I go about doing it this way? Or how do I go about doing it that way? Because, you know, you always see that with actors going out there and just trying to, you know, ask questions and trying to make the character a little bit better. How did you handle that?
Well, I'll give you two answers. So Sean William Scott, who plays Doug Glatt in the movie, who's supposed to somewhat be me, you know, I got to meet him. And when I did meet him, he told me that he had read my book like 10 times trying to learn who I could have been without actually meeting me.
Right.
And I remember we did talk for a while at one point. He was just trying to pick my brain a little bit, you know, like, what's your mental makeup? Like when you're about to fight somebody, like, what do you say to someone? How do you challenge them to a fight? Why are you fighting in the first place? And stuff like that. You know, so I really appreciated that he was trying to.
That's awesome.
Yeah, for real. Like the guy was trying to really live the character, although he had a script that was telling him to do some other things too. So it was kind of twofold for him, you know.
One thing I wanted to ask you, Doug, was after that Carolina year, you kind of went the way of the tough guy and made a lot of stops along the circus, you know, as it is. But one of the most interesting periods for me was, where was it that you played senior hockey for like the whole season? Where was that?
So I had tried to get back into the East Coast Hockey League after playing in Carolina. And the following year, I picked up a handful of games in Johnstown, got to actually play for the legendary Steve Carlson, who's one of the Hanson brothers in the movie Slapshot, yeah, which was an unbelievable thrill for me. And, you know, at this time, although I was willing to fight, it was really becoming evident that my skating ability was starting to hold me back. Because coaches would say, Jesus, you know, I mean, I appreciate that you're willing to help my team and fight, but you need to bring a little bit more. Like, you got to be a better skater, and you got to actually play a little bit more hockey. You know, sitting on the bench and just waiting for the opportunity was starting to get a little – times were changing, basically. So I knew somebody who was a pro scout in the NHL, and he told me about this league up in New Brunswick, the St. John's area, Prince Edward Island area. And he said, listen, if you want, I can get you up here playing this league. And I knew nothing about the league, but it was basically an all-Canadian league. It was all Canadian guys. And it was kind of like the East Coast League my first year. You were either a really good player, you could score 50 goals, you might have been an ex-NHL player or an ex-pro player in the minors somewhere, or you were like me, you were just a fighter. And let me tell you something, I was the only American in this league. I was the only import. And when you come in as an import, number one, they're already gunning for you. They're trying to get you the hell out. They're trying to make it rough and tough for you. So add to that, that I bring a resume of a guy who is supposedly tough and wants to fight and is going to, you know, try to do that role in the league. So believe me, I had guys chasing me for fights because they all wanted to fight me. And it was great. Believe me, I loved it. I was in heaven. Every night I got a fight. And I'm not kidding you. Every night I got to fight. It was awesome.
What I want to know is, what was the situation up there? Like, where were you living? Were you getting paid? Like, what was the...
Yep. Oh, yeah, I got paid. I probably made $400 or $500 a week. I mean, I wasn't rich. You know, $400 or $500 a week. Maybe some bonus money, some cash under the table would go with that. A couple of $100. I actually ended up staying when I got into Miramichi, was the area I was in, New Brunswick area of Miramichi. And I ended up staying with a guy who was the radio announcer. He would call the games. He was the guy that would call the games. Like, you would see the guys on TV that call games. And that was this guy. And he said, I got a house. I got a spare room. You can stay with me, you know, until you get your own place or whatever. And I ended up staying with him for the full year. And it was really an incredible relationship we had, because Miramichi, and not to carry on too long, but Miramichi was a team that was always skilled. For years and years, they always had great skill. But when it came to going for, I believe, what they call their Allen Cup, and when they would get in the playoffs to contend for the Allen Cup, they always got out-muscled. They always got beat up. And they would lose. They just get intimidated and get pushed out of the rink. And this guy was like Don King, the boxing promoter. He was promoting Doug Smith as Miramichi's new tough guy. And so it was like lighting a fire into the league. So these four or five other teams in the league, they've always had tough guys. So, of course, who are they looking for now? The new guy. And this Miramichi team, they really changed their way this particular year. Not only did they bring me in, but they brought in an ex-NHL guy named Jacques Mayotte. Mailman. Oh, yeah. The Mailman was his nickname. Now, I knew Jacques Mayotte from just being a Hockey Fight fan, and he was legit. I mean, he was an NHL-caliber fighter. Super tough guy in that area, too. So everyone knew him in that area. So he was a badass. And they also brought a third guy in. His name was Mark LaBelle. Mark LaBelle played in the NHL, played for the Dallas Stars and some other teams. Yes. He was super tough. So all of a sudden, this Miramichi team, who was always known for skill and not having toughness, had three super heavyweights to go against everybody. So we had a hell of a time. We all loved playing with each other. We all loved fighting. Mayotte, let me tell you something. Mayotte couldn't have been better to me. He was like a big brother taking me under his wing, coaching me, telling me who this guy was you might fight tonight, who not to fight. This guy might be well advanced than you. Just really looked out for me. So I got to always thank Mayotte for what he did to me.
Wow, Jacques Mayotte. Wow.
Legend.
Yeah, 100%.
Legit. Oh, yeah.
Like, he was a straight up boogeyman, like in minor league hockey. Guys were running away from him, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, if you ever looked up his resume, like on the hockey database, his resume is a mile long. He played with so many teams, tons and tons of penalty minutes. I mean, he was a super badass.
Oh man, and let me and then what happened? You stayed up there. Did you guys win the whole thing?
We lost. Yeah, we didn't win the whole thing. We lost out. But nevertheless, we had a nice run.
Doug, you worked with the Boston Bruins trying to go out and trying to basically teach players how to defend themselves on the ice. What was that like? And working with a professional team like that, trying to basically, you know, players in such instances going out there and, you know, getting into a fight, you know, and you're teaching them how to throw the fists. What's that like for you going out there and working with a pro team like that?
Yeah, I mean, that was incredible. I just happened to know some of the right people, and I remember talking to some Bruins management guys and saying, you know, you really should try to get someone out on the ice like myself. You know, maybe I can teach some of these guys, like the European players, the college kids who don't fight that much, you know, teach them how to defend themselves. Not so much to make them tough guys and be goons, but right, just to be able to defend themselves, because they're an investment for your club. You've invested a lot of money. You've drafted these guys. And the last thing you need is a player to be scared out there or intimidated or not confident that he can defend himself. And if your team is lacking a tough guy to stand up to help that guy some night, he's all on his own. So he better know what he's doing. So anyway, Bruins management, you know, they gave me a chance to get on the ice and kind of show guys how to, you know, clutch and hold and how to throw punches and how to keep their balance in case they ever were in a scrum. And I was very fortunate. Believe me, I lasted 8 years with the Boston Bruins organization, and those are some of the best years of my life.
Now, some of the players that you've taught thus far, like who were like some players that stood out in your mind that would basically go out there and fight?
Yeah. I mean, some of your fans might know guys like Colton Orr and Steve McIntyre and Dennis Bonnvie. You know, we had a lot of tough guys in Providence, which was the Boston Bruins affiliate in the American Hockey League, which is where I basically worked out of the Providence Bruins arena there down in Rhode Island. And the Bruins, for a long time, were always known as the Big Bad Bruins, and they always kept a couple of tough guys in the minor leagues just in case they needed a call-up. And, you know, we had a lot of young guys. We had kids like Brendan Walsh, who was a Boston-based kid. You know, we just had a lot of tough kids, and they really absorbed my workouts on the ice. You know, and all I would do was just put them through workouts, basically, and critique what they already had, just try to refine it a little bit, make them a little bit better, you know. Mm-hmm. And a guy like Colton Orr or Steve McIntyre, you know, they just worked their balls off, and they were able to get out of the American League up to the NHL, and they've both had incredible NHL careers.
Colton Moore is actually up in Danbury now, and he's I don't want to misquote, but I think he's part of the ownership group of the arena and of the junior hockey team right there in Danbury. So he's involved. Awesome. You might even see him. I don't know if he's going to be around, but I actually haven't seen him myself, and I'm up there all the time. But that's crazy. You know, I wanted to ask you, Doug, like, I don't think that people, you know, because hockey has a pipeline to the NHL, you know, in some ways that you know, some leagues have that connection between the NHL and the ECHL and all that. But I don't think that people kind of like on some of the circuits you were on and even on some of the high levels, I mean, it's a lot of cheap hotels and bus rides and stuff like that. Like when you're a fighter, you got to fight a guy and you might've broken your hand or you might've broke, like, or maybe you never broke anything when you fought, who knows, but you know, the grind of fighting and then the wear and tear of minor league life, how did that affect you, you know, as in your playing days?
Well, I mean, minor league hockey in general for any player, regardless of your level of talent like myself. I mean, I was, you know, bottom feeder. But, I mean, it's definitely a tough lifestyle. You don't get paid a lot. I mean, those guys average anywhere between $50,000 and, say, $75,000, maybe a little bit more. They don't make a lot. But, you know, the goal is to get out of that league, get up to the NHL where, you know, instead of having hamburgers for dinner, you're having filet mignon. And instead of bus rides, you're taking a plane. And, you know, instead of carrying your own bag, someone else is carrying it for you. There's just a lot of, you know, the luxuries of making it up to the NHL, which is why you see guys, you know, who are fighters, for an example, you know, they fight every night because they want to get out of that American League. They want to get brought up. They want to be noticed. And it's a grind. Like you said, it's a tough way of life. I didn't do it that long, so I can't really say it was tough for me. I enjoyed what I did. And believe me, even the nights I lost fights, I still loved it because I was just skating on a pond a few years earlier. So I'm in heaven regardless.
Doug, who is one of the toughest guys that you fought in your hockey career?
Listen, I have to be fair. I mean, every guy that I went against was tough because they were all so well advanced ahead of me. They had started long before me. They all had experience. I mean, I was climbing a mountain, you know, with flip-flops on, not boots, you know. So it was tough for me. It was a tough grind. But, I mean, listen, it's obvious some of the guys I fought did play in the NHL. And I always have to give recognition to the guy that made the cover of my book for me. His name was Frank Bialowis. He's known as the Animal. He played in the NHL. He played in the American Hockey League. And the year that I played against him and had that one big fight, my first game in the American Hockey League, I got brought into the Moncton Hawks. And he gave me an opportunity. I skated out to him and I said, you know, what do you think? And listen, he was in my position once before too. He was challenging guys to try to make a name for himself and try to make the position on the team he had, you know, worthy. And he didn't deny me. He gave me my opportunity. Now he kicked the shit out of me. And, you know, like I said, it made the cover of my book, but it was the most glorious moment of my life.
That was Frank Bialowis who did that to you, huh?
Yeah. And I've said it before. I can't believe my head is still on my shoulders.
Well, I don't know if you know Bialowis, but this is a major league tough guy. Like he was a Danbury guy. He was a Danbury trasher.
He played at the end of his career out there.
Yeah, he's tough.
And I've always said it. I mean, he's one of those minor league guys that really – for whatever reason, and I feel bad for the guy because he really worked so hard. He was such a good, tough guy, too. A good role model for that, so to speak, of that position. But he just didn't get a lot of games in the NHL, and I just felt like he really was deserving of that job.
The guy is unbelievable. He's like a Humpty Dumpty, too. You know, he probably had every injury, and he just kept coming back. Oh, tough as nails.
Yeah.
Well, do you remember your so I guess you finished off in the AHL. Who's your last fight?
I think my last game I played in was Springfield in the American League, and I think that was going against Dennis Bonvy. I squared off with Dennis Bonvy, and that might have been it. Yeah. Like I said earlier, I didn't get to play full seasons in places. I just wasn't that good of a hockey player. But, you know, it was three games here, one game there, two games here. You know, I bounced around. But, again, like I said, from learning to skate so late and getting the opportunity I did, I certainly can't complain. And with all the notoriety that has come with it after, you know, believe me, I'm grateful. And again, I try to use that platform for things like your event.
Oh, great. You know, 100%.
Your Mustache Classic. And if I can help out in any way, you know, and I try to do a lot of charity work because if I can run with this a little bit, and it might be a little corny, you know, hey, Doug Glatt, movie goon, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, some people are into it. They love it. And so if I can just touch them a little bit and get them involved. But you know what I'm saying? Like if I can drag those people into it too and have them support events like yourself, it's all good to me.
Let me tell you, this guy is a class act, and I could just tell, you know, like I see him consistently. We've had people who are going to be at the Classic who've already played with him, but then we have a bunch of people who can't wait to meet him. This guy's used his notoriety to help so many good hockey-related causes, and I'm sure law enforcement-related stuff, and I see you're into diabetes-related, health-related stuff. So you know what it is? It's when you have people like Doug that want to get involved with what we're doing, that just brings it up to a whole other level, man, you know, and that's really straight up, you know, and we're all really blessed, man, because It's really appreciated. We got so many guys. Wait until you meet, you think you know, but you don't know. Wait until you meet the number one fan of the Goon movies. He's this massive, he's the grumpiest guy in the world. He's this Macedonian guy that lives in Astoria, Queens, and he goes to the gym and he brings his phone so that he can watch movies on his phone, and he watches both movies back to back, sometimes every day on the treadmill, every single day. This is like, well, listen, it sounds made up, but it's not.
Yeah. Well, listen, just make sure he wears his shoulder pads on the 21st. He's going to need them.
He's a goalie. You're going to have to run him.
Don't worry. I've fought goalies before.
Oh, man. Don't tell some goalies that, you know, we had – I'm an Islander fan. I'm wearing an Islander jersey right now, Fight Night 2011, Rick DiPietro, you know, getting messed up, obviously, and then the eight ejections, everything like that. A memorable event for sure.
I wanted to – wait a minute. Will, I just want to do a little tiny quick sidetrack before we wrap this up. But, you know, I'm not going to mention the podcast, but Trevor Gillies went on a podcast recently. I'm sure everybody knows – what the name of the podcast was, and he said something about Rick DiPietro that night that I can tell you that as I watched it happening on television with my own eyes, I always said the same thing. When Rick DiPietro went out there to fight that guy who was so much bigger than him, mm-hmm. all he wanted in the world was to land one good one on that guy for the Islander fans. He wasn't doing it.
Right.
He wasn't doing it to try and be a tough guy or a pretty boy. He was going out there to fight that guy to show the fans that he was worth it, that he was worth that contract, that he was worth everything. And let me tell you something. I don't know him personally, but I could tell you what Trevor Gillies, he said a lot of good things about Rick DiPietro, but that was one of the few times in my life where I said, you know what, this guy's going out. He got his eye socket broken. He literally got his eye socket broken right there on the spot, but he was going out there. That's why guys do it sometimes. It's that pump. The guys on the Islanders that played with him that night, they're going to remember the night that he went out there to center ice and tried to fight. That's not his role. You know what I mean? But I'll never forget that. And I think Gillies paid him a big tribute by saying, you know, he all he wanted in the world was to land that punch and be that guy. He didn't do it, but I think it said a lot about who DiPietro was in my mind. In my mind, it solidified who he was to me. You know, he wanted to be worth every penny of that contract, you know?
Absolutely right there. Doug, my final two questions for you here are, do you have any favorite enforcers from today, like Ross Johnston, Matt Martin, Ryan Reeves, or even Tom Wilson for that matter? And number two, how do you feel about fighting being taken out of the game thus far? You know, I mean, we're seeing right now the fighting aspect just about – almost extinct at this point in time in the game of hockey. You rarely see it now, just about, but what's your take on those two?
Well, I love the guys that we still have fighting in the game. I mean, how can you not like Matt Martin? I mean, he's a tough guy. He's been doing it a long time. And Ryan Revis is, he's probably the heavyweight champion of the league. I still love those guys. How can you not? But the game is changing, unfortunately, and I don't want to end this podcast on a sour note, but I really don't watch the NHL that much anymore because of that. Now, I hate to be that type of guy, but, you know, I miss that aspect of the game. I miss the fighting, and because they're eliminating it, it just makes me just disinterested in the game. Now, I do still watch some games, but I'm not watching it with the intensity that I used to watch it when I could anticipate, you know, that Matt Martin might drop the gloves with Ryan Reeves, because it might not happen these days anymore. Even if they're out there, it might not happen. But right. The NHL has tried so hard to really get rid of these guys, and they're almost like dinosaurs. They're just kind of hanging on. Thankfully, they can all play. They're not one-dimensional. They're not just a fourth-line bench-warming goon. They can play the game. They bring a lot to their teams, you know, alongside toughness. But, it's just sad for me because I grew up watching that hockey and that style of hockey, I should say. And I tried to portray that role in my own career. And so it's definitely disappointing that the league's changing.
I wanted to ask you one question, Doug. You said there was a second book. There is a second book?
Yeah, so we did a sequel to the first book. We added some more stories. You know, when we first put the book together, it was like, you know, an encyclopedia. It was like 5,000 chapters, for Christ's sakes, because I had so many stories and so many things that, you know, like I said, I observed and I watched and, I, you know, bus rides and all the stuff and nightlife and whatever. And but we had to kind of really condense it into one book, and it couldn't be too big where people would be like, I'm not reading this thing. It's like 10,000 pages. So we decided, let's do a second edition at some point, which we did. We added some more chapters to the book. We tweaked it a little bit. And Jesus, I mean, that one took off too. It was crazy, you know? So we're very fortunate.
Any, I mean, you probably won't be able to say, but was there any rumor of maybe a third movie, anything possible? Or,
you know, I heard way back in the beginning that this Goon, you know, series, so to speak, was contracted for a trilogy of movies, so three movies. So if there's a third one on the horizon, we're getting into about the right time span now, 2 or 3 years later. So, you know, from the first one, I think the first one was 2012, next one was 2015 or so, 16. So we're getting close to maybe them sitting down and discussing maybe another script. So, yeah, I would hope that there could be one more anyway. And where does Doug Glatt go from here? You know, maybe he becomes a cop. Who knows?
How long have you been on the job?
So I work in the town of Hanson, Massachusetts, which is just south of Boston. I've been here over 20 years. Great little community, great town. You know, I work with a real great group of guys and girls. I mean, we have a solid department. And, you know, I couldn't complain. I couldn't ask for a better place to be. Believe me, it's a fantastic place.
Before you were on the job, what did you do?
You know, I was a regular guy bouncing around from job to job. You know, I was a doorman at bars. I was a laborer. You know, I mean, I did everything. You know, I worked at the gym. You know, I just kicked around. But, you know, I was just chasing that dream of hockey, too. So you never really... I don't know. You don't want to settle for a career job when you're still chasing a dream. You just drag your feet, and maybe that's a mistake, but nevertheless, I lucked out. I obtained my dream.
Awesome.
Nothing wrong with chasing your dream right there, man. Especially if
right.
People remember you for it, you know, that's really right. Awesome right there. So that's great, guys. Thank you so much. Before we go, Doug, Matt, how do the people follow you on social media, number one? And number two, you know, I just want to say personally, thank you guys for coming on the On the Board Sports podcast. Really means a lot. So,
well, thank you so much for having me on. Like I said, we're wrapping up the Mustache Classic right now. You can follow us on @MustacheClassic on Instagram. We're also Mustache Classic Hockey on Facebook, and me @MattCaputo. I'm also @TakingBackHockey for if you just want to see hockey stuff and the hockey stuff that I'm involved in @TakingBackHockey on Instagram. I just want to thank Will again for having me on. He's really a great host. He brought such a touch of class to last year's event and showed up in a suit, and he was pulling chicks from the bar at the brewery.
I'm hanging out with you.
He went right up to the blondes. Forget about it.
God. I'm a shy one.
Oh, he was. You should have seen him leaning in. He's like all shy all day. He sees this blonde at the bar. He's got the suit on. He's all leaning in. Listen, and really, really a big thank you to Doug, man. A lot of people don't know what he did. Not only did he come forward this year and approach me about being involved this year, but he also supplied us with a great jersey. He's offering to come down and, you know, sign autographs and post pictures with people. And really, you know, to have a figure like Doug involved, you know, Trevor Gillies was involved from a distance last year, but to have Doug be able to come down this year, it just means a lot to so many, me especially, but it means a lot to so many people in this group. You know, these guys are a big fan of Goon. They're a big fan of the movie. And I'll be honest with you, it's really just a blessing. So thank the both of you guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I appreciate that.
Doug, how do people follow you on social media?
Oh, I'm sorry about that. Yeah, you know, I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram under my name, Doug or Douglas Smith. I'm very easy to find. I'm, you know, a social media butterfly. and you know, and you guys know me now. I mean, you know, I'm very easy to approach and talk to. I love talking hockey. I love talking fighting. You know, and again, when it comes to the charities, I certainly love being involved if I can. You know, anything I can do to help you guys, believe me, I'm in it.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Doug, thank you. Matt, thank you. We really appreciate it, man. Thank you for sacrificing some time. And we'll see you on the 21st.
We'll see you guys Saturday.
See you next weekend. Bye-bye, guys.
Bring your mouthpiece, Matt.
Oh, I will.
All right. So on that note, for everybody, Matt, thank you again for coming on. Doug, thank you again for coming on. We really appreciate this. And for myself, I'm Will Trucci logging out. We'll talk to you guys soon. Peace out.